Let's never say that again. Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. I apologize. Right, let's do this. So, as I type my 15-year-old... As I type, before we dive in, a warning. The content of this podcast may not be appropriate for some young listeners. This is real life, and that means that sometimes it can be a little bit graphic. So listen on at your own peril. As a veterinarian, dog behaviorist, best-selling author, and trainer, over the past decade, I've had an obsession with transforming the behavior of dogs. Understanding their brains and creating practical strategies that you can implement easily at home. I know all too well when the dream you imagined when you first got your dog is far from your daily reality. In fact, out of the blue, a few months ago, my little dog Gorse was bitten by a dog 20 times her size. And suddenly our life of stress-free walks, a calm and cuddly household, and being teammates was replaced with reactivity, anxiety, and worrying about what's around the next corner. I'm Dr. Tom, this is the Help My Dog podcast, and this is me documenting that journey of transformation, sharing my knowledge and experience with you and having a few laughs along the way. All right, Help My Dog family. So I promised we'd talk calmness, so that's what we are going to talk about. But actually, I'm thinking we're going to mix it up and we are going to start with cringe stories today, because I don't think, have we ever done that, Madeline? We've never started with cringe stories. There we go.
In fact, look at me. Shocked me. And
I know. Look. Gosh, Madeline's running. She's running from the cringe hole. Let's never say that again.
I don't know why it sounds so.
Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. I apologize. Right, let's do this. So, as I type my 15-year-old, as I type, my 15-year-old German Shepherd Cross Bandit sleeps at my feet. He has lived a long and happy life. 15 years old, that's amazing. He has lived a long and happy life since I rescued him at 3 months old. In fact, he doesn't belong here, and he is not the reactive dog that has led me to this group. Actually, there is only one transgression that I can remember in our 15 years together. But if you're going to mess up, you may as well make it a good one. That's a good motto. Bandit and I started obedience club as soon as we could. He was easy to train and whizzed up the classes and was known as Mr. Congeniality by all at dog club. Bit of a mouthful, but we'll go with it. And therein lies the clue to his downfall. Being so consistent in class, it wasn't long before we were being urged to start trialing. He had never put a paw wrong. Perfect recalls, healing, standing for examination, even stays. So on the day in question, I entered a trial full of confidence. Bandit and I stood in the lowest ring, which is often at one end of the ground, so the dogs are less distracted. Perfect. All was going well. Bandit did all the on-lead patterns perfectly. He stood for the exam like a statue, and we were holding our heads high. Next came the recall, his favourite party piece. I have this in the bag, I thought smugly. Bandit remained stock still as I told him to wait, marched confidently away, turned on command and waited for the command to call your dog. Clever Bandit eagerly waited my command and leapt to his feet as soon as he heard come. But for the first time in his little doggy life, he didn't come. In the next two rings, both classes were in the middle of their stays, and Bandit decided they were a guard of honour waiting to be inspected by him. It was clearly his duty to rush up to every one of them and congratulate them with a wag, a sniff, and an invitation to play. The turmoil that ensued was unbelievable. The distraction of a reactive dog is nothing compared to a friendly dog with a sense of humour. I should really have remembered that pride comes before a fall. That's so sweet. I like him. I like that. That is adorable. Right, one more and then we'll dive into calmness because I promised. Dear Mrs. Cringe. I assume that's directed at you, Madeline.
Yeah. Dear Mrs. Cringe in her cringe hole.
I don't really have a current cringe story, but I do have one from the past. You can use her name as she is sadly no longer with us. In the early 1990s, we lived in South Florida. My husband built a nice deck around an above-ground pool. It had a hot tub, room to lounge, have friends, etc. We also had two furry family members, a German Shepherd and a Golden Retriever. The GSD, Troy, was a sly little girly.
We have a sly little girly.
Yeah, I think all of ours are sly little girlies. We had a sliding glass door out to the pool area. And she had figured out that if she hit the sliding door just right, they would open. She loved opening the door, but she never went out until, at this time, we had a nice man who took care of the pool. Tim, not his name, weighed about 300 pounds, and he was a great guy. One day, he was in the yard to service the pool, and clearly, Tim was tempting enough for Troy to choose that day to use her door-opening skills. Oh no, yep. Troy hit that slider, out she went, and lovely Tim managed to vault our 6-foot privacy fence faster than I have ever seen a human move. Evidently, Tim was a little nervous of large, sly canines. Luckily, life went on. Tim continued to service the pool on the condition we put a board in the slider when he was scheduled to be there so Troy couldn't open it again. I love that. That's all. I thought Tim was going to end up in the pool.
So did I. It was very suspenseful.
But just as good. Over a hedge.
Privacy fence. Oh, it wasn't even a hedge. I couldn't hit that.
Gosh. Not yet. Oh, I see. That's the signal. I get the wording now. Wow. So let's talk calmness, seeing as we've tackled those cringe stories. Calmness is one of those things, guys. I always like to explain why something's important before we give some practical strategies. It's important because it makes your life easier, quite simply. If you don't have a calm dog, you can find yourself constantly telling them what they should be doing, yeah? Whereas a calm dog will just choose to do the right thing. You think about, you know, all the behaviors and choices associated with calmness. It's lying down, it's sleeping, it's settling, it's being aware of distractions and choosing to not engage with them. It's being quiet, in other words, not barking. And so calmness becomes one of these things whereby it sort of fixes loads of different struggles. So the more energy you put into calmness, sometimes it can be the 20% of energy input that gets you 80% of the results, because you're fixing multiple things at once by growing this skill of calmness. And really, there are two prongs of attack when thinking about calmness. First of all, it's what your dog spends their time doing. And then the other arm of it is what your dog spends their time not doing, right? And so what can be useful is if you grab a piece of paper, and this is the exercise that we'll do for this episode, I think. I never have a plan. I'm always just try and give as much value as possible in every episode. So grab a piece of paper and down one side, how should they be spending their time? What should they be doing? And on the other side, put what they should not be doing, okay? Now, on the what should they be doing, some of you might have heard me teach on this before, and you know, this teaching has been viewed millions of times at this point, so hopefully it's helped a ton of dogs along the way. Something called the calmness triad, okay? And what it is saying how your dog spends their time influences their level of calmness in day-to-day life. They're very efficient beings, yeah? You know, the way that I kind of think about this is if you book yourself in for a week-long spa trip, right, which sounds a scary thought, doesn't it, being at a spa for a week? But just imagine it. Day one is probably quite a tricky day, because your brain has been primed by the week before. And the week before was mad rushing around, running from one thing to another, getting pulled in different directions. So the first day, you're like having to think, right, okay, I'm going to set myself a target of sitting down for 30 minutes. I'm going to read my book for 30 minutes. I'm going to go swim in the pool for 30 minutes. And you're having to consciously say to yourself, I'm going to make this choice because this is the appropriate choice. Day two, you do that a little bit less. Day three, you do that a little bit less, and you don't need to do that in order to be settled. The reason being is that your brain down-regulates arousal level. Your brain effectively grows calmness because it's adapting to the environment that it finds itself in. What we do is what we become. What our dogs do is what they become, right? So there are three different ways your dog can spend their time that will grow them in a calm direction. The first is really simple, actually similar to the spa, let's limit their choices for periods of the day, right? The reason why we're more able to be calm at a spa versus in a, I don't know, shopping center is because, well, there's not that much to do. There's not that many choices to make. We're not being asked to make choices. It's literally like, go and sit in that room and yeah, go and sit in that room, right? Go and sit by the, get in the pool. Yeah, get in the pool, right? There's not much to it, is there? And it's the same for our dogs. And that's where giving your dog active rest opportunities is really powerful. That might mean separating them from you, putting them in a room of the house, putting them, you know, if they're used to being in a crate, have them spend time in a crate, have them spend time in a puppy pen. Maybe have periods where if your dog likes sitting on your lap, have them sit on your lap, yeah? Because ultimately there's just one choice. It's very clear. This is what you're doing. You don't need to think about anything else. That grows calmness. It's a management strategy because when they're doing those things, they're also not doing loads of other things, right? They're well-behaved. But bigger than that, their brain has a chance to just down-regulate and lower their arousal level and adapt to this new way of life. So that's the first one, active rest, we call that. Second is, hey guys, I just want to take a little pause to let you know how you can get involved with the official Help My Dog membership hub. If you're enjoying geeking out about the science of dog behavior, want to watch dogs practically being trained in real life, and you want to progress even further, you can join our members-only community and get targeted learning with me each and every week to help you combat your dog struggles at home, on walks, and out and about. And right now, when you jump in, you can actually watch Gorse's behavior rehabilitation from trauma to triumph in an over-the-shoulder video diary showing real-life situations. To find out more, just head over to www.helpmydog.com/hub. Second is something called passive calming activities. And these are activities where when your dog engages with them, when your dog does them, it grows calmness. The act of doing them grows calmness. Getting in the bath for humans, putting some nice music on, calming music, grows calmness. Have we got anybody that likes to knit? I don't know about knitting, but Madeline's laughing. I think she's imagining me knitting and realize it'd be chaos. Knitting, I've heard, is very calming, very soothing. It's an activity that as you engage in it, you grow calmness, right? I'm sure you all think of better examples than I'm thinking of. I'm all out of examples today. So passive calming activities for our dogs tend to fall under a few different categories. Licking, chewing, sniffing, right? Massage, yeah? So for example, it might be a long-lasting chew. It might be something lickable that, you know, you can smear something on a lickable silicone mat and they can lick, and that in itself is going to grow calmness. Sniffing, so you could take some of their daily food allowance and chuck it on the grass and they've got to sniff and find that food. Sniffing is a passive calming activity. It grows calmness. Being massaged, being stroked, right? That also is a passive calming activity. The act of engaging in it grows calmness. It also grows calmness in humans as well. And interestingly, it gives you and your dog an oxytocin boost. Little kind of fun geeky fact is one difference between dogs and wolves is that wolves, the oxytocin boost increase that wolves experience when interacting with other wolves is greater than when interacting with humans. On the flip side, with dogs that have been through this whole process of domestication, when a dog interacts with a human, the oxytocin increase is massively higher than when a dog interacts with another dog. Okay, so what I want you to take from that is firstly, the act of interacting is purposeful in itself. The act of touching your dog, stroking your dog, if that's what they like, massaging your dog, you're doing something for your relationship and calmness. But also, those of you that have dogs that don't currently like other dogs, in the sense of they're worried about other dogs, they're reactive to other dogs, they don't have any dog friends, well, actually, the fact that they've got you is more important. They're getting more of an oxytocin boost from interacting with you than they ever would interacting with other dogs. Big difference between dogs and wolves. Anyway, I digress. So we've got active rest. We've got passive calming activities. Third and finally is something called calmness protocol. And what that is saying is your dog can be free to make their own choices, yeah? But when they make a choice that is more associated with growing in a calm direction, we can give them some of their daily food allowance. Every day they wake up with this pot of value. We get to decide where we pay that pot of value. And so when you spot them settling, when you spot them lying down, when you spot them hopping up on their bed, when they do a slow blink at you, right? Sometimes it's what they don't do. When they see a person pass by, but they don't go and jump up out at the window, right? Give them some of their daily food allowance. You're priming those choices. They're going to make those choices more in the future. And in turn, their brain's going to catch up and adapt and offer more and more calmness. And it's going to be easier and easier for them. It's a little bit like a big boulder growing calmness. It starts really difficult and you're like, oh, we're not getting anywhere. And then you start to get momentum and you start to see more and more calmness come into their life. Does that make sense, guys? So that's on the first half of your page. Second half of your page is the what not to do, right? How don't we want them spending their time? And this is a really common stumbling block that I see people encounter, whereby they're working on all the first column, but they're not seeing the calmness gains that they could be seeing, yeah, to the level that they could be seeing them. And that's because, well, every time somebody walks past the living room window, right, the dog's bouncing out of their bed, barking, you know, doing wall of death around the living room sofas and just running around like a crazy thing. And the thing is, if I got all of you to get up and do 10 star jumps or sprint on the spot, you might think that that would make you more tired, but it won't, yeah? Theoretically, you would think, it's almost like you're saying to yourself, I am more tired as a consequence of this. Actually, you're more energized. Actually, you've upped your, you know, you've activated your sympathetic nervous system. You are more energized. You are more activated by that process. And your brain, if you keep doing it, if every time I see you just kind of slouch, I'm like, get up and sprint. That'd be terrible, I get it. And it'd be really difficult the first few days. But day 4, 5, and 6, your brain would start to gear up the arousal level, give you more energy, yeah? Have you entering and going through the day with more energy, because our brains adapt to, you know, the experiences we have in life and what we do every day. And it's same for our dogs. We can inadvertently create a gold medalist, right? We can inadvertently create gold medal in wall of death. Right? Just by the fact that our dogs are doing this day in, day out. So this is where we want to think about management strategies. How can we reduce that by 10%, 20%, 30%, maybe even 50%? And this is where sometimes for a short period, if this is a real problem for your dog and you've got no other spaces where your dog can spend time, you might want to put some film up at your windows where they can't see out. You might want to consider periods of the day where your dog's on lead. So even if they do, you know, bounce out of bed to go bark at the neighbor, actually they're on lead. So you're reducing their activation by 10, 20%. They're not doing the gold medal sprint every, you know, 5 times a day that's growing their brain in a highly aroused and excited direction. So we've got film at the windows. We've got having them spend time on lead. Third is sometimes we owners create a problem for ourselves a little bit. And the activities that we do with our dog grow them in an excited, aroused direction rather than a calm direction. Example being, if twice a day we take them out to the park and play crazy frisbee with them because we're trying to wear them out, and they never get worn out, right? Or they get worn out the first time you do it, but again, just as we've been talking about day 4, 5, and 6. They're no longer worn out because their brain has adapted and geared up. And the thing is, their bodies have as well now. So they're fitter. And we're in this spiral of, you know, growing an athlete that is adapting to living in a war zone. And we want them to live in a spa. Yeah. So sometimes it's about cutting out the exciting activities and replacing them with enrichment that is going to grow them in a calm direction, like the passive calming activities as an example. So guys, that's a whistle-stop tour of calmness, but actually that has everything that you need to really start to push that boulder. And as I say, it's gonna feel difficult for the first few days. That is the nature of the process. And that's why I wanted to record this podcast so you can understand the reason why it's difficult. The brain has got to adapt. The brain of today is giving you an arousal level and choices based on what's happened in the past week. That brain has to catch up when we change the day-to-day of our dogs. And that means the first few days is often, you know, it feels like you're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. That's because you are. You've changed the life. The brain now has to catch up. And then it's, you know, round peg, round hole, and everybody's happy. So that was this episode of the Help My Dog podcast. Tune in next week. Send your cringe stories to cringe@helpmy.dog. If you've got a suggestion for a future podcast episode, again, send, or you've got a question where you're like, I would love Tom to talk about this thing that my dog does. Again, send it to cringe@helpmy.dog. And we'll, Madeline will basically stick it in front of me and say, talk on this. So, and probably put some punishing cringe story in front of me as well that I've got to read to you all. Have an amazing, amazing rest of your week, guys, and I'll see you next time. Stop right there. Before you go, it's my mission to get you to your dream that you imagined when you first got your dog. Those walks with freedom, those walks where you're not worrying about what's around the next corner. Maybe actually being able to leave the house rather than, you know, your dog having separation anxiety and it limiting you. And one way that we do that is through the BehaveVet Behavior Clinic. I started it over a decade ago. They're a team of over 10 clinicians that are veterinary professionals, behaviorists, trainers that I have trained, and they do this day in, day out, these transformations, take dogs from reacting to 10 out of 10 dogs to having close and successful interactions. The only thing stopping you from accessing that service is getting in touch. Now, the other thing to say is if you're insured with Pet Plan, Many Pets, Kennel Club, or Agria in the UK, we do direct claims with them, which means you can get an entire behavior transformation covered by your insurance and an out-of-pocket expense to you of just £25. So guys, if you want to find out more about booking a remote Zoom consultation with the BehaveVet Behavior Clinic, all you need to do is go to www.beha.vet/HMD. www.beha.vet/HMD. And if you want to hear some of our recent wins, then head on over to Trustpilot and search BehaveVet.